17. While everyone else was outside enjoying himself, Vern Tilden sat in the office at the typewriter, a sheet of soft yellow paper sticking up in front of him. With one finger he tapped slowly, weighing each word carefully. I, Vern Tilden, acting as agent for the American Metals Development Company, during the period of actual transfer. He stopped typing and studied the paper. Then he went on. To the new owners, for whose guarantee of adequate protection the company is maintaining through my own self and two other responsible employees a constant watch over. He stopped, scowling. There was something wrong with the sentence. He took a second piece of yellow paper and scratched a few lines of words with his fountain pen. He read them over carefully, pondering. Then he got up from the desk and went over to the window. He opened the window and returned to his place before the typewriter. He pulled the paper out of the typewriter and inserted a fresh sheet. I, Vern Tilden, representing the American Metals Development Company, have been given responsibility in the following matters to arrange and otherwise bring about, in the best possible manner, the main physical transfer of all holdings and real assets. Suddenly he leaped up. Somebody had come up on the porch. Strange, light feet. Not Carl, not Barbara. He listened, frozen. There was no sound, only silence. Maybe he'd been mistaken. The sound came again. Somebody was standing on the porch. The doorknob turned slowly. Vern's heart thudded. He glanced around the office. What the hell? No hammer, nothing. Where was Carl? Carl was big. The door opened. A small man peered uncertainly inside, blinking and bobbing nervously. A thin, oriental face turned in Vern's direction.
Hello?
The oriental said.
Who are you?
The man came in, shutting the door behind him. Vern did not move. The man was small and slender. It was hard to tell how old he was, perhaps 40. He wore a faded uniform of the last war, cloth leggings and metal-soled boots. In his left hand was a small cap.
Who am I?
The man echoed. His voice was dry and nasal, as if he had a cold. He reached into his coat and brought out an envelope.
You may examine these, if you wish. My papers.
Vern took the envelope and opened it. Cards and documents, written in Oriental characters, stamped and signed, with tiny photographs of the man, rows of numbers and seals. I can't read these.
They are to inform you that we will be moving in here in a few days. I have come a little ahead of time to make sure everything is in order.
You represent the new owners?
I represent the Chinese People's Political Consultative Conference. At this time, the All China People's Congress is not in convocation. Supreme power of the People's Republic of China is therefore vested at this time in the Chinese People's PCC.
I see, Vern said. In a few days? I thought we had more time than that. This comes as somewhat of a shock. Just a few days?
2 or 3 days. I came on ahead. If everything is in order, the change can be made at once. You are not sure if you had been able to evacuate your personnel on time.
Vern hesitated. Do you want to sit down?
Thank you.
The little Chinese sat down by the desk, crossing his legs. He took out a package of Russian cigarettes and put one in his mouth. Vern sat down across from him. He watched the Chinese light his cigarette. The matches did not seem to work. Several of them were needed before the cigarette was going. You speak American, Vern said. Are there Americans around?
Oh, no. I learned American in Peoria 10 years ago. I was there on a business trip.
Vern put out his hand. My name is Tilden, Vern Tilden. They shook hands.
Harry Lou.
Vern studied him. Harry Lou was pale and slight. His face was flat and expressionless. He was beginning to become bald. His hands were long and the fingers thin. On one finger was a heavy metal ring. You don't look like your name ought to be Harry. Harry Lou smiled.
Use any name you wish, then.
You're a soldier?
Oh, yes. For a long time. I have not been active for a number of years. On the long march, I injured my leg. It was a very long way.
Yes, it was a long way, I remember.
I wonder what Kafka would have thought about it. You recall his story, the Great Wall of China. He told how the people in one part of China might be paying taxes to an emperor, long since dead, not knowing of the new emperor. The country is so large. I walked most of the distance. Near the end, I went on in one of the trucks when my leg gave out.
Vern nodded. I suppose historians will someday call that one of the turning points in history.
It depends, I think, on what kind of historians exist in the future.
But it did represent something, an end to something and the beginning of something else, maybe the end of a cycle, as Toynbee or Vico would say.
Yes, the cyclic historians.
Some of them seem to think our time is going into a period like the Roman period, about the time of Christ, or later, when the empire began to retreat, when the Pax was beginning to break up. Harry Lou smiled.
Would you say, then, that you are the last of the Romans? I wonder what that would make us. It's an interesting analogy.
Interesting?
It would seem to make us the first Christians.
Vern stood up. Is there anything you want me to show you before you go? Any of the installations?
Yes, it might be a good idea. I'm supposed to see what condition the grounds are in.
Vern opened the door and walked out onto the porch. I'll show you what you want to see. Harry Lou joined him.
Fine.
They walked down the porch steps onto the road. Vern saw a little light bicycle parked a few yards down. He walked up to it. This is yours?
Yes.
It was a Russian-built bike. Vern examined it. When he was finished, he and Harry Lou walked down the road, away from the office. What do you want to see? Vern said.
Nothing in particular. The main question was whether you had removed your staff and closed down all the processing.
We have.
How many people remain here?
Three, myself and two others. We're supposed to turn the ground over to you. Vern was deep in thought, scowling as he walked along.
Is anything wrong?
Harry Lou asked. Your analogy to the Romans.
Not mine, Harry said. I didn't create it.
My analogy, then, that we're the last of the old world, the old Romans, and you're the new, the first Christians.
Yes?
I'm wondering about the Dark Ages. That's what the Christians brought. Brutality, cruelty, force. The end of reason and freedom, serfdom, the Middle Ages, the lowest ebb in history. Each person living on a tiny hunk of ground like an animal, chained to it. No hope, no education, just enough food and clothing to keep him alive. Slavery under a different name.
But that's not all.
Oh?
There was the church. Don't forget that. Was it really so dark? Look what the church gave him. A chance for eternal life, a meaning for his existence. The church explained why he was alive, and it gave him the key to salvation.
It promised him salvation. Empty promises to keep people in line. They sucked the people dry, worked them to death. Fairy tales, glitter and pomp to make up for their empty lives. Don't you remember what Lenin said?
The opiate of the people.
Harry Lou nodded.
I remember. God, the Holy Trinity, the virgin birth, it doesn't mean much to us today. But it meant a lot then. I wonder if it was really so dark. The Dark Ages. We call them dark, but there was a spiritual activity there. A strong spiritual feeling. They didn't consider their times dark. The early Christians were willing to die for their church, for what they believed.
They were swindled.
By our standards. But our emphasis is so much different. We have lost interest in their things, the idea of God, the hierarchy, physical and moral, the levels, earth to water to air to fire, the universe in which a moral God moved, in which there was a visible rise to purity from the gross earth below, to more pure water, to the heavens, and finally to God's realm, the fire beyond the heavens, the stars. And some day every man was taken up there, lifted and purified.
Empty words.
Perhaps. And perhaps the new Christians bring only empty words, too. Promises. Promises and a new dark age. Brutality and ignorance and the end of reason. But our words have meaning for us, the way their words had a meaning for them. The Holy Trinity. Empty words now, but not empty then.
Vern glanced at Harry Lou curiously. Do you believe in God?
I? Oh, no. But it depends on what you mean by God. We took down the icons and put up pictures of a man instead, and perhaps he is our God. Some of us may bow down in front of him, before his will, and it is said that he can do no wrong.
Harry Lou considered.
So, perhaps we have the Holy Trinity back again, in a new form. Old wine in new bottles. We have restored a lost age, and perhaps the brutality and ignorance, too.
Vern stopped to light his pipe. Harry Lou's eyes followed the flick of the lighter with interest. A pipe lighter, Vern said. Quite a gadget. He passed it to the little Chinese. Harry Lou studied it.
Yes, much better than these.
He tapped his box of Chinese matches in the pocket of his coat.
Only a few of them light.
He held Vern's lighter out. An impulse seized Vern. Keep it.
The lighter?
You can have it. I can get another easily. A present. From the old world to the new. He smiled grimly. Harry slid the lighter into his coat.
Thank you.
He was silent for a time.
The others, you said there were two others here.
Yes, a woman and a young boy.
Where are they?
Off someplace, probably listening to his treatise on ethics. At least that's what they say they do.
Do you have doubts?
I don't know. Maybe they're reading, it doesn't matter.
What are they like, the woman and the young boy?
Vern shrugged. Nothing unusual.
Is the woman young? Is she attractive?
As a matter of fact, she's a girl I had an affair with years ago.
Does the young boy know?
I doubt it. I doubt if she'd mention it. It wasn't too pleasant. She was very young at the time.
And you were much older, of course.
Of course.
You and I are perhaps the same age,
Harry Lou said thoughtfully.
We are getting old. I am getting bald, and your hair is thinning. It was not like that when you and the girl had your affair, I assume.
It had started.
I wonder why an affair between a young woman and an older man should be unpleasant. In China, such things are common, but they are not usually unpleasant.
She wasn't even 20. She was at a vacation resort in New England. She was staying with some college people. We met by accident. I drove her back down in my car. She didn't know what was happening. I took her to a motel and pushed her into bed. It's a good way to learn realism.
Your society places such a value on realism. I noticed it when I was in Peoria.
Don't you? Harry Lou set his lips.
What is wonderful about the real world? Atoms and void? I will tell you a very interesting fact. In our society, we older people are forbidden by law to destroy the fantasies of youth. In fact, we create fairy tales for them to believe.
So I've heard. Your scientists are under the thumb of the politicians. They can't tell the truth about the world, and the artists the same way.
That's so. Like the science of the Middle Ages, our science and art are bent to social needs, servants of our political planning.
Slaves of your new religion. You approve?
I think so.
You want a country of children? You want to keep them from growing up and learning the truth about things?
Harry Lou smiled. Are we doing that? Perhaps.
It's vicious. What are you, a new church with a new pope, ruling the people with an iron club, dictating to them, telling them what to think and do and believe?
Yes, we direct them now, and hope they will be able to direct themselves someday. I and my group are almost gone. The group that knows our tales are fairy tales, fantasies. Those who are coming will believe them and call them truth. They won't want to grow out of them. They will not even know there is such a thing as growing out of them. And I will not tell them, because I can't. It is the law, and it is a very wise law.
You don't want them to know?
It's for their own good. Atoms and void. It is social realities that count. That must come first. All other truths must be bent. Art, science, We provide them with myths, wise myths, as the church did. They are not literally so, but they are wise. They have meaning. They will help when they are needed.
Vern and Harry Lou walked along in silence, neither of them speaking. At last they came to the huge heaps of slag, the quarries dug out of the ground, the miles of rubbish and scrap that had been discarded, voided by the great machines and factories. "This is the end," Vern said, stopping. "There's nothing more from here on. We might as well go back." They walked back. "Well," Vern said finally, "what are you going to do with it? It's all yours. What are you going to do?"
"I don't know. It's not for me to decide."
"Are you going to use it or break it all up?"
"Some things will be destroyed. We need parts, tools, materials, but everything will be reworked. We will have to change everything."
Harry Lou kicked at a piece of rock in the road.
"We'll cart off all the piles of rubbish, tear down the towers. A lot of cleaning will have to be done, and then reworking, reforming, changes everywhere."
"For good ends, I hope."
"Good. Good. Beautiful. Truthful. I wonder."
"You wonder?" They had come to Harry Lou's bicycle. The little Chinese swung himself onto the saddle, lowering himself in place.
"I wonder if such things are real. Remember what your famous judge said. Pilate, the judge in the Bible."
"Pontius Pilate."
"He said one very good thing. What is truth?"
"But Christ said, 'I am the truth.'" Harry glanced at him. He smiled, a thin, hard smile.
"I am the truth. Precisely."
Vern felt a cold chill. "So that's it." Harry Lou moved off down the road, balancing himself expertly on the bike, a thin man, very small, in his faded uniform. Vern watched him as he grew smaller and smaller, bouncing up and down slightly, holding onto the handlebars with both hands, his face expressionless. Vern turned to go. All at once, he paused. Harry Lou had halted the bike. Vern watched him, puzzled. Harry Lou groped in his coat pocket. He brought out something. Very carefully, he dropped it onto the road and stepped on it, grinding the heel of his boot into it. The remains sparkled in the sunlight. Vern's lighter. Vern shuddered. My God. He made his way back toward the office. When he looked again, Harry Lou was gone. My God. He shook his head, dazed. So that's what it will be. Carl and Barbara walked slowly along the path. In the warm sunlight, Barbara's hair was beginning to dry out. The stream of water that had been trickling down her neck had stopped. Her clothing no longer clung to her. Some of her spirits began to flow back a little.
"How do you feel now?" Carl asked.
"All right. That's good."
They continued in silence for a time. Presently, they came to the women's dormitory. Carl stopped. He waited for Barbara to speak.
"Want to sit around while I change?" Barbara said finally.
"I should go on and get something to eat. I've been up a long time. I'm hungry."
"If you want to wait, I'll eat with you later."
Carl considered.
"Hurry up,"
Barbara said impatiently.
"Make up your mind. I want to get inside and change."
"Lead the way."
They walked up the steps into the building. On the second floor, Barbara opened the door to a room. They went inside.
"Not bad," Carl said, looking around. "Those are pretty flowers in the vase there."
He wandered around the room, gazing at the prints on the walls and the books.
"I'll leave you,"
Barbara said.
"Yes, go ahead. I'll try not to be in the way."
Carl was standing before the bookcase, his hands behind his back, his head tilted to one side, trying to read the titles of the books. Barbara went to the closet and took down her dark slacks. From the dresser, she nabbed a white shirt.
"I'll be back soon."
Barbara left the room. She hurried down the hall to the bathroom. In a moment, hot water was running in the tub. She stripped off her damp clothes. Soon she was sitting in the tub, letting the hot water pour around her. She sank down into the water as it rose higher and higher. Odd how warm water could take the dampness out of a person. She sighed with relief as the water filled up the tub, covering her more and more.
There was no pleasure like a hot bath. For a long time she lay stretched out in the tub, her hands resting on the rim. She was relaxed, at peace. After all, she had not been in real danger. If she had started to drown, Carl would have saved her. Probably he would have waded out, picked her up, and carried her back to shore, explaining the Archimedean principle of the displacement of volume and the loss of proportional weight of a body immersed in water. She laughed nervously. Would he have done that? It would be like him, lecturing and announcing in a booming voice. Maybe he would be too busy explaining to save her. Maybe he would stand over her as she drowned, lecturing and talking, on and on. Barbara rubbed the bar of ivory soap into foam, patting the foam against her arms and shoulders. She reached over and turned the taps off. The tub was full. She sank down, washing the soap foam from her. She pulled the plug out and stepped from the tub onto the bath mat on the floor. She dried herself, carefully and rapidly. When she was completely dry, she put on her clean clothes, the dark slacks and crisp white shirt. Standing before the small mirror, she brushed her hair over and over again until she could feel it against her neck, lying light and fluffy. Then she gathered up her old damp clothes and hurried up the hall to her room. Carl was sitting on the bed reading a book.
"What is it?"
Barbara said.
"The book."
"Russell's Outline of Western Philosophy."
"How is it?"
She hung up the towel in the closet.
"Interesting. I'd like to borrow it sometime."
"You can, if you want."
Barbara sat down on the chair.
"Cigarette?"
She held out the package to Carl.
"No, thanks. I don't smoke."
Barbara lit a cigarette and put the package on the table. She sat smoking, watching Carl as he turned the pages of the Russell book. Carl glanced up at her uneasily. After a while, he put the book down on the bed, closing it.
"I guess I don't want to borrow it. I used to read a lot of philosophy, but not so much anymore. I think when I'm through with my treatise, I'll forget the whole business."
"What will you read then?"
"Fiction. I haven't read much fiction. I've spent all my time with Kant and Spinoza."
"Was it wasted?"
"Not completely. Not more than the geometry you learn in high school."
"I'd call that wasted."
"Perhaps," he nodded. "I suppose so. There's more outside to see than in books."
"Do you feel that way?"
"Yes. That's why I walked around today. I got up very early, at 7:30.
"You passed by here. I heard you whistling."
"Did I wake you?"
"Yes."
"I'm sorry."
"It doesn't matter. It was a nice morning. I like to be out, too. That's why I was in the water."
"I was surprised to see you splashing around. I was walking back from the hill and I cut across the park. I didn't mean to spy on you."
There was silence.
"Are you angry about it?"
"I was, but it doesn't matter. After all, the park is a public place."
"I'm glad you're not mad anymore."
Carl smiled at her, his big, honest face beaming in relief.
"You were mad for a while. I don't blame you. I shouldn't have been standing there watching. I knew I was doing something wrong. I knew I should have gone away. I realized it at the time. But I'm afraid I didn't. I just stood and watched you."
"I want to know why,"
Barbara said quietly. Carl flushed, startled.
"I didn't mean to watch. I..."
"You had no right to. You must never do that to another person."
Carl hung his head, crimson with humiliation. He muttered a few words and then subsided into choked silence.
"Don't ever do anything like that again. Not to anyone."
Barbara stirred.
"Everybody has his own world, his private world. Don't spy and ruin it."
Did I do that?"
She looked quickly up.
"That's what you wanted to do."
"No."
"You invaded my world."
"No, I didn't mean to. You're wrong. It wasn't that at all."
"Okay."
She nodded briefly.
"Let's forget it."
She lit another cigarette and sat smoking rapidly, her hands pressed tightly into fists, not looking at Carl. Carl shifted unhappily. He swallowed a few times. At last, he got to his feet. Barbara glanced up.
"What is it?"
"I think I'd better go."
"No. Sit down."
Carl sat down awkwardly, feeling for the bed behind him. Barbara continued to sit in silence, her eyes bright, staring into the distance, unseeing.
"I have to do some things," Carl muttered. "I have some letters to write.
You're going?"
"I really have to."
"Do you think you can come and go as you please?" Carl did not understand. He shook his head, bewildered.
What do you mean?
Barbara crushed her cigarette out.
You came and watched when you wanted. Now you're going. Do you think you can do that? Do you think people will always let you do that? You're growing up. You're getting to be a man. Someday you'll be a man. Do you think you can do that when you're a man?
I don't know. You can't. You can't.
She put her hand up, rubbing her eyes quickly. Carl slunk down in his chair. She was crying. Tears were running between her fingers, down her cheeks, falling silently onto her shirt, staining her starched white shirt.
Can I do anything for you?
Carl murmured. She shook her head. After a long time, she jumped up and crossed the room to the dresser. She pulled a handkerchief from the drawer and turned her back to Carl, blowing her nose. She moved over to the window and stood, her arms folded, the handkerchief pressed in a tight ball between her fingers.
Carl?
She said.
Yes?
She turned around, smiling at him, her eyes dark and bright.
I'm sorry. Don't worry about it.
He nodded. Barbara sat down on the bed, leaning back. She sighed, letting her breath out slowly.
It's too nice a day. It is nice, isn't it? The sun and everything?
Yes.
Why were you up so early today?
I wanted to get outside. I wanted to take a long walk and see how things were.
Where did you go?
Oh, I wandered around. I went up on the hill and sat thinking. I thought for a long time about my childhood. Then I came down. That was when I saw you. I crossed the park and I saw you in the water.
Yes, it was beautiful. The sun and the water. I know. Well, Carl?
Yes?
She leaned toward him, looking intently into his face. They were very close together. Carl waited apprehensively, his hands on his knees. Barbara rocked back and forth, touching her hand to her cheek, her ear. He could see the rapid tension of her body, taut and nervous. Her eyes were dark and large.
You go ahead and do whatever it is you have to get done,
she said suddenly.
Run along and get it all finished.
Carl stood up quickly.
All right.
Barbara crossed to the door, opening it for him.
When will it be done?
Carl faltered.
Done?
When will you be finished?
He considered. He felt strange. His scalp and ears prickled. He licked his lips nervously.
I guess in a couple of hours.
Barbara examined her wristwatch, calculating to herself, her lips moving.
Why?
Carl murmured.
Why? Don't you remember?
No.
Barbara smiled. She swayed back and forth, her arms folded, her lips twisting.
You really don't. You don't remember. You left something unfinished. You have to finish. You started. And when you start something, you have to go through with it. Didn't your mother tell you that?
What is it?
Your treatise. You haven't finished reading to me. Don't you remember? I'm surprised at you. I thought it meant so much to you.
Carl grinned doubtfully.
That's right. I was going to read the rest.
Of course you were. I expect you to read the rest. I've been waiting.
Have you?
She nodded.
Yes.
Carl put his hands in his pockets.
There were several parts I wanted you to hear. That's right. I began to read, but I didn't get a chance to finish.
When are you going to finish?
Carl considered.
Well, I...
How about after dinner?
It'll be dark.
Barbara's eyes flickered.
That's so. It will be dark, won't it? I hadn't thought of that. It's a problem. Well, I think perhaps we can read inside where there's light.
That's an idea.
Then I'll expect you after dinner. About 8, all right? Don't forget to bring the manuscript with you. You'll be finished with your letters by then. That should give you plenty of time.
About 8?
Carl moved out into the hall. He felt a little confused.
I guess that's all right.
Barbara closed the door slowly behind him.
I'll see you then, okay?
Okay,
Carl said.
About 8.